Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
The following podcast is a member of the Great Big Owl family.
Hello and welcome to Friends with Friends. My name is Pete Allison. This is David Cripp.
Ahoy, hoy, hoy. Drew speaking.
Good to speak to you, Drew. How are you?
I am drewing well.
Good, good. I'm glad. What is drewing the well. Most exciting
well, Pete.
Thing
you get it? I'm
to...
drewing well.
No, I got that. I got
drewing
that, yeah.
Well.
Yeah, drewing, yeah. What is the most exciting thing to happen to you this week in isolation?
Oh, it's pathetic, isn't it, Pete? But it's our quiz every week. That's my genuine yes. That's the highlight of my week.
Yeah, that's. I mean, that's basically it in the evenings, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just do a quiz and sit silent on the sofa facing a blank wall the rest of the evenings.
I can give you the sort of rundown of what else I've done. I've shaved my dog.
Oh, shaved him?
Shaved him, yeah. Because no dog groomer's knocking about at the moment. So took some clippers, had a good old go on his fur.
I mean, shaved implies a hell of a lot of fur came off.
Well, the problem is, and this is something
I'm picturing the Sphinx cat.
Yes, no. It's the hell of a lot of fur did come off, but he looks basically no different because he had so much fur. So
right,
I think
okay.
It's just one of those things. Like when I shave my beard, I really go at it and then I'm like, oh, nothing's changed, even though there's a sink full of hair.
Do people often make the observation that you look quite a lot like your dog?
Yes, that has happened on a number of occasions. We have a similar shading of hair, don't we?
Yes, and just lots of it.
Yes, correct. Yeah, there's that thing about owners looking like their dogs, isn't there, which I'd never really subscribed to before, but turns out
you are you prove that as fact.
Absolutely. Any highlights from your week, Pete?
Any highlights? I got a new toilet seat delivered.
New toilet seat covers.
And I fitted it myself, Dave.
Did you?
So I was quite pleased with that.
That's very pleasing. That is remarkable.
Apart from that, I have almost literally nothing to report.
I know. This is the way of the world, though, isn't it? A lot of Friends being watched at the moment by us.
Yeah, exactly.
Honestly, we mooted this in the quiz on Friday night. We do a weekly Friends quiz. If you haven't joined us yet, you should. It's a lot of fun, and by a lot of fun, I mean we have a lot of fun. But, you know, other people seem to too. It's 8 p.m. British time every Friday on our Friends with Friends Instagram, which is at FWFpod. And during the quiz last week, we mooted an idea, didn't we, that we might spend lockdown watching every episode of Joey and reviewing them in the same way we do with Friends, which the more I've pondered on it, the more I'm really keen for, because it just feels like something that we should definitely do at some point.
But the other great thing about it is that I don't think I've seen a single episode, so I will be watching them for the first time. And if we were to watch them in chronological order, I'd sort of look on in horror as the full failure of Joey as a concept and as a sitcom unravels quite so rapidly.
Yeah, I think there's a whole new dynamic to it, isn't it? Be absolutely wonderful. Okay, well, look, let's definitely not park that thought for too long, because we've got nothing to do. And turns out, Pete, 46 episodes of Joey. There's loads of it.
I know, 46 is a hell of a lot, isn't it?
Yeah, it got a second series, so it can't have been the huge failure we all remember it to be immediately. Do you know what I mean? We've been asking you to nominate your favourite episodes. The criteria we ask for are tell us why you'd like us to talk about your favourite episode. Send us a voice note if possible, therefore you get to feature on the podcast yourself. And thirdly, if you do send us a voice note, it's much more likely to get played if you tell us how much you love the podcast. So shall we delve into this week's inbox selection?
Oh, yes. I hope they tell us that they like us.
This is from Annie Hughes, and Annie Hughes says...
Hello, I really love the podcast. I've been listening for the second time during lockdown, and it's still great. I would like you to discuss the episode, season 7, episode 12, which is the one where they're up all night. I've just watched it, and I think it's a really sort of well-plotted episode, and there's some quite nice sort of, like, bits with different characters, and there's some nice bits where they're all together as well, and there's also the line where Ross is like, "Don't rush me," which I really enjoy. And it's just a great episode, so I think you should discuss that one. Okay, bye.
Still great, Dave. We're
still great. So listen to the second time. Doesn't just love the podcast once, loves the podcast twice. She's really cracked the code and sort of drilled into making us play that out on the podcast, hasn't she?
Yes, yes. Well, thank you, Annie. That was very kind of you.
That was lovely. So the one where they're up all night, Peter, shall we?
Yes, let's go. Do you want to hit us with a premise?
Season 7, episode 12, the one where they're up all night, directed by Kevin S. Bright, one of the main men himself.
Oof. Oh!
There you go. Don't know what that means in terms of the style of the show, but it's a fact. Here's a synopsis. Everyone's awake for the entire night after the friends try to see a comet from the rooftop. After Monica and Chandler are later unable to sleep, Rachel and Tag go to the office to search for a business file that Rachel claims Tag misplaced, and Joey and Ross try to escape the roof after getting stuck there. Meanwhile, Phoebe's smoke detector goes off and will not stop beeping, leading to a run-in with a firefighter. Four splinter plots there today, Pete, but they all start together, so I think that's where we should probably start, on the roof before the credits roll.
The noticeable thing about the before the credits bit, it's what, like a minute and a half long,
yeah.
If that? There are multiple references to perving on people in the neighbourhood in the space of about 1 minute.
Yeah, it is the bit where I use that, you know, the emoji with the sort of bared teeth.
Yes.
That sort of horizontal smile with a bared teeth. That's the emoji I've used in my notes when Joey says, "Check out the rack on that chick."
Yes. Mm. Well, it starts with Rachel revealing that she's tried to perv on Tag, doesn't
yes.
it?
Yes.
And then Joey checking out the rack on this chick or whatever it is he says.
And then having shut that down, Ross then comes back round to it just after the credits as well.
Like, yes.
Show me. And they all start to look through a pipe, which is curious because that offers no sort of magnifying features.
It wouldn't do anything, would it?
No, I would have thought absolutely not, apart from just create a little circle at the end to look through. They're all on the roof waiting for the Bapsteen King comet, which is, I'll be honest, Pete, this episode is the only reason I know what the Bapsteen King comet is.
Is it real?
I think so, yeah. I think I'm... Well, hang on, let me just quickly check now. Bapsteen.
It sounds real.
Well, it does, and it's a strange one to make up if it's not real. I'm not sure it is real, actually, now, Pete. Now that I've had a little look, there's no real references on Google.
What does Bapsteen King mean?
Well, let's find out, shall we? Does anyone listening have any sort of specialism
out of my depth
in this?
Here.
So you type in Bapsteen King Comet, and it's just... I thought I'd learned something from this episode years and years and years ago, and I've spent the last 20 years thinking the Bapsteen King Comet is a real thing.
Yeah, all I've seen is that you can buy some very niche Friends memorabilia, which has the Burger King logo on a t-shirt, but with the word Bapsteen instead of burger.
Yeah.
So that's a thing.
But that's it, isn't it? It's not real, Pete. Oh, I'm really...
It's not, is it?
Genuinely annoyed about that.
The Bapsteen King memorabilia is also available on a mug.
Look, if there's one thing we're going to be getting for the quiz, for set decoration, I'll be wearing a Bapsteen King t-shirt in a couple of weeks.
As a podcast concept, are into niche Friends references, right?
Yeah.
Why would you ever want that on a t-shirt? Like, it's not even funny.
No, and it's just from afar. It's just the Burger King logo as well. So it's not interesting enough, is it, to be differentiated at a glance?
You can also get it on a duvet.
That is. Imagine bringing someone back to you after a night out.
It's on one of these websites where you can get like artwork printed on almost everything. What's the least likely thing anyone would want? A Bapstein King, a miniskirt?
Surely you can't get a Bapstein King miniskirt.
You can. You can also...
Oh, there's not Bapstein King underwear, is there?
I'm sort of bewildered by how niche that is.
Mm.
How much do you think a king-size Bapstein King Comet duvet cover is, Dave?
£40.
£99.
Fuck off. £99.
Surely literally no one has ever bought that.
No. If you have bought the Bapstein King.
Oh my God, there are product reviews.
Oh my God.
People have.
This is wild.
Shall I give you some product reviews?
Please.
I mean, people seem really happy with it. Worth every penny, says Karen. who presumably has literally more money than sense.
Jeez. And hey, do you know what? If there's this many sales, it stands to reason that one of our listeners may well be one of these people. So if you are listening to the podcast and you do own the Bapstein King duvet, please do send us a picture of it. We would be fascinated to...
Oh my God, I've just read...
What?
This is... Okay. This is from Laurie. Laurie says, beautiful, but it's not cotton and I have allergies to other fabrics. But the design is lovely, so if you aren't as allergic as I am, I recommend
it. Wow.
God, what horrors has Laurie experienced?
Jeez, that must be tricky finding non-cotton duvets, to be fair, in general.
Anyway, we digress.
Oh, we very much digress. We've not even got to the credits yet, Pete.
That's true.
My interest in the comet party, now that we've realised it's not a real comet anyway, but they're all up there, but they're not doing anything. There's there's no drinks, there's no food. It's not like they've had like, oh, do you know what'd be fun? Let's go up to the roof and have a little...
Yep, make an art of it.
Right. They've just all put a coat on and gone to sit on some garden furniture, open brackets, where's that come from? Why have they got high quality garden furniture knocking about if they only go to the roof once every 7 years? They all get bored quite quickly. I mean, after 2 hours of just sitting there, but they're just literally sitting there looking at the sky.
Also, on these occasions when comets pass over, and I think we've already shown that we don't know too much about those.
No.
Can't you be quite specific on the time that it's passing over?
Yeah, you don't have to wait that long, do you?
You'd have to wait outside for 2 hours, do you? As if you could be asked.
What we've learned is that we don't know much about comets because we don't even know which ones are real and which ones are fictional, but... Yeah, I wouldn't have thought so.
I mean, also, I would also suggest that it would be incredibly difficult to see a comet passing over in one of the brightest and busiest and most well-illuminated cities in the world.
Yes. Yeah, Manhattan at night isn't going to be sort of low on light pollution, is it? The whole premise of this episode is completely
bollocks.
Pointless because they shouldn't be up on the bloody roof in the first place. All right, so we've got Ross and Joey's story, we've got Chandler and Monica, we've got Rachel and Tag, and we've got Phoebe on her own, which is an unusual thing to just have one of the friends on their own doing a thing.
Yeah, well, Phoebe and the fire alarm is one of, I think, the best, and possibly because it's part of quite a small collection, the best single-person plots in Friends, because I think it's very hard to be as funny as she is on her own.
Yeah, it's so impressive, isn't it? I literally wrote down Lisa Kudrow is amazing in this.
So much of it is physical. So much of it is in her reactions and so much of it is in like the direction of it.
Yeah, and when she says, well done, Phoebs, it's genuinely laugh out loud funny when she thinks she's fixed the smoke alarm the first time. She holds this entire quarter of an episode just on her own with a fire alarm, which is mad good, isn't it?
She also, when she drops it down the chute, when she's trying to get rid of the broken fire alarm, doesn't she? She calls it, in the Netflix version, which I wouldn't have seen on E4, she calls the smoke alarm a noisy bitch.
Oh, yeah. This is something we haven't really...
I'd never seen that before.
Yeah. So if you're a long-time listener to the podcast, you'll know that most of Pete's ingestion of Friends has been from like daytime television viewing.
Yeah, cleaned basically. Up versions.
Yeah, so you don't get any of the swears. Yeah, she does. She really goes for it, doesn't she?
But then I was wondering how on E4 they would have ended that scene, because that scene is basically her putting a smoke alarm down a chute and then saying, see you later, you noisy bitch, or whatever it is.
Right.
So how do you subtly make that scene end without the noisy bitch line? To be honest, I say subtly. On E4, they were never remotely subtle.
I was going to say, there's the one thing I would definitely say about any of the cleans is that they just literally take it out, don't they? They don't give a shit how it looks on the television. They just, as long as it doesn't have the swear word in, that's it.
Yeah, so to answer my question, they don't make it subtle.
Yes. But yeah, she's so good in it. She like carries this whole thing so well. And it's such a, even from the start where they're coming down off the roof and Rachel and Tiger are like, oh, we've rented a movie. Yeah. And she's like, oh, I'd love to see a movie. They're like, no, it's just us. And she's, get me out of here. Get, you know, her performance in this episode is so great to watch. Also, what time is all this happening is my question.
Well, the biggest shock for me was that it, in the end, transpires that it's on a work night.
Mmm!
Go to bed!
Well, not only are they up in, like, the dead of night watching the comet, but Rachel and Tag have planned this as, like, their sort of precursor to a movie night.
Yeah.
Like, they've already planned to watch a movie after... I mean, it must be, like, 11 p.m. at least by now when they're watching this comet, right?
Well, by the time at which... Right, hang on. Let me map this out. So by the time at which Phoebe decides to call it a night,
yeah,
and she's gone home and has gone to sleep,
yeah,
by that point, Rachel and Tag are still on the sofa making out,
yeah,
with the intention of, well, evidently having sex, but also watching a film, we learn. So it's a very late night film, isn't it?
It is, especially because they've got to be in work tomorrow, both of them.
Mm.
And she's his boss. There's a lot of irresponsible bossing going on here, but we'll come to that in a minute. But yeah, so Phoebe chucks the noisy bitch down the chute, as it were, and then I mean, it's curious that there's a fireman wandering around the halls of her building at 1 a.m. or whatever time it is, isn't it?
And how a fireman was also quickly so capable of tracking Phoebe from a name that was written in a blanket to then knowing her address.
Yeah, they don't really sort of extrapolate on that, do they? She basically goes, how do you know it's me? And he says, your name's written on this blanket. But yeah,
that doesn't explain it.
Nope, absolutely does not explain it. A lot of questions over Mr. Fireman wandering around the halls and knowing the addresses of young women that live alone at that time of night.
Very suspicious.
The weirdest thing about this, though, is how it ends, because there's a really, it's really well done, this whole thing. I love this plot so much. The fireman comes in, Phoebe's been caught, you know, she's like, oh, it's mine, that's fine. And then her last desperate hope is like, so how do I reset this? Please just tell me. He says, oh, there's a reset button on the other side. And she's like, oh, thank God, it's all done. And then the payoff is that the reset button, she's already smashed the reset
detached
button off.
Yeah.
She's already smashed it off the fire alarm. So at this stage, it's still going. What happens? That's the last we see of it.
She doesn't fix her problem, does she?
No, that is the last we see of it. So to this day, Phoebe Buffay's smoke alarm is still going off, as far as we can tell.
Smoke alarm's going off, and I understand that this is their function. It is such an incredibly annoying noise that it becomes quite annoying just watching a fire alarm go off on an episode of Friends.
Oh, it's so annoying. I mean, this is, I don't know if this is something I want to admit publicly, but mine kitchen smoke alarm has got a little sock over it, Pete. It's so sensitive. So yeah, I've got a kitchen living room combo. So there's another smoke alarm about 5 feet away on the ceiling, you know? So it's not like dangerous, but basically
you're not at risk.
The one in the kitchen goes off every time you open the oven. It's like, it's not a smoke alarm so much as just a, like, your cooking alarm. And I don't need an alarm to go off every time I'm cooking. So I've had to tie a little thing around it so it doesn't go off all the pissing time. But yeah, if there's a problem.
Is it one of your socks?
I say sock, actually. It's a piece of muslin. But yeah, there you go. A little insight into my kitchen.
It's fascinating.
I'll show it to you on Friday on the quiz if you want.
You don't need to do that.
You little bitch. You noisy bitch. All right, so I'd say the other one that kind of is a bit of a non is the Chandler and Monica storyline.
Yeah, this I wasn't big on this.
Well, it's a bit tenuous because the rest of them, and we'll come to Rachel and Ty because it's a weird reason why they're up all night, but at least it's a reason. And it's like they just couldn't be bothered with Chandler and Monica and go, why would they be up all night? Can't sleep? Yeah, that'll do. You know, and it kind of feels a bit like they hadn't quite got anything for Monica and Chandler, because this whole kind of thing is just basically a bit of tennis with one of them being awake and one of them falling asleep, isn't it?
Yeah, and which, like, from, and again, this is comes with the caveat of, I understand that this is because it's a sitcom, and if the logical thing happens, then it's just over. Just bloody let her go to sleep. Let each other go to sleep. It's fine.
This is literally it. Is the sense that, like, they're so unhappy with the fact that one of them's awake that when the other one's asleep, that very selfishly wake them up and make them join them in their sort of insomnia world.
And they wake each other up in the same way that, like, a young kid does on Christmas Day trying to get his parents up, yeah, like slamming doors and things like that.
Yeah.
Just go to sleep.
Crashing pans in the kitchen. It's quite telling as to the level of their relationship how far down their list of options having sex is when they can't sleep. Like, yeah, they get up, they make milk, they read a book, they talk about the book. You know, like, it's quite far into the episode where they're like, well, if we're both awake, shall we? And they both seem really into it. It's a kind of a strange, you know, two sides of one coin. It's taken them a while to get around to it, but then they're like, they're both really up for it, aren't they?
So after Monica falls asleep during sex,
mm-hmm,
and Chandler wakes her up again, Chandler is wearing pajamas, having just told Monica that she fell asleep during sex. So was he, you can see where I'm going with this.
Yep.
Was he wearing the pajamas during sex, or were they having sex? She fell asleep. He put his pajamas on and then said, you just fell asleep during sex. Because I would argue that if Chandler is the sort of person who keeps his pyjamas on during sex somehow, it's not implausible that Monica would fall asleep during sex.
I think it's very unlikely that he's put his pyjamas on before confronting her, right?
So he must have been wearing.
So it's either he's wearing the top half of his pyjamas, but the bottoms are off.
But the bottoms are on when he gets out of bed.
Oh, yeah, so he's fully pyjamaed up.
Because in that scene, he gets up and walks out to the kitchen and he has pyjamas on.
That is wild, isn't it? So we can, well, here's the thing. Maybe what it is, Pete, is that we all know about Monica's cleanliness. Maybe
she insists.
She insists that every square centimeter of his body is covered to prevent some sort of germs. Maybe he's just wearing full pajamas, but he just has to open the fly and pop it out, and that's how they do it.
Doesn't that make their sex life sound sad?
I mean, their sex life is such a strange thing, because they're always talking about wanting to have sex, but it always comes in these strange scenarios like this. And it seems quite a stressful sex life is what I'd say. I mean, cards on the table. I remember watching this when I was a lot younger and thinking, feels very unrealistic that someone would fall asleep during sex. I'll be honest, now, I can see how it might happen. I can see how you'd just be a bit tired.
I would also say that this gives off strong Chandler and Monica Only Do Missionary vibes.
Yeah, it really does, doesn't it? It really does.
Which is fine. Whatever they're into is fine.
No, I don't think any of us are under any illusions that Chandler and Monica are anything but quite vanilla, right?
Yeah. Well, I would even say that outside of bedroom, they just, as a couple, are. Well, in fact, they themselves have this feeling, don't they? Because there's that bit where who's the couple that they go on a date with?
Yeah, so when Phoebe's starting dating Gary, isn't it? And they're in this sort of who's hotter as all them vibe. And Phoebe and Gary are doing it in the park and doing all this, that and the other. And Monica and Chandler are really struggling to keep up with it.
Yeah, so they themselves, or at least Monica acknowledges, is that they're quite a straightforward couple.
Never says during that conversation, does she though, Pete, that she makes Chandler keep his pyjamas on and just poke it out of the fly?
No. No, also, that isn't a flattering way of describing Chandler by saying poke it out the fly.
It's not, is it? But it's, you have to
just
admit,
pop it out.
A very funny image.
It is, but I don't wish to think about it too much.
Chandler's little bing.
Oh.
We'll be right back.
I'm Jack Beaumont, and this is Crime Club, the podcast where I talk to people who have done terrible, terrible things, either immoral or illegal, ideally both.
Oh, fucking hell, mate.
That's Crime Club.
Oi. Oi. Oi.
Crime Club. Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I feel like in the past couple of weeks, this podcast has become quite... I'd say it's gone from a 12 to a 15.
It has, hasn't it, Pete? And yeah, maybe this is indicative of sort of everybody's lockdown vibes. Maybe every... I feel like everybody's getting a bit sort of lonely and spicy in their own different ways. And maybe this podcast is... Maybe it's coming out... In the pod in a way that we haven't previously anticipated.
Although, in our defence, it is a recurring theme in almost every episode of Friends. And this episode in particular involves a plot about sex.
Yeah, it's a thing that we've kind of noted a number of times before, that for quite a mainstream sitcom, it's very sex-heavy, isn't it?
Mm. So it's fine, we're just being true to Friends.
Exactly. Rachel and Tag, okay?
Yes. Also, this episode, I really felt like Tag seemed young.
Yeah.
And I know that this relationship ends, doesn't it? Because, I mean, he jumps down the hallway on the scooter and Rachel's turning 30 and she thinks I've got her. So I get that that's very much he's intended to seem, but he seems especially childish.
Yeah, it's weird watching it out of context, isn't it? Because that came across loads more to me than it had done previously when watching them, like, in order. I mean, the thing that... I mean, should we talk about the genitals phone thing?
But I just don't... I don't get that. A, I don't get why someone would find that sort of enjoyable to do from Tag's perspective. But equally, I don't understand why it pops up, so to speak. Why that happens... 3 to 4 times. It's referenced 3 to 4 times in this episode, isn't it? It's like a recurring joke. I don't understand why that's a recurring joke, because it's not even that funny the first time.
I don't understand. I just don't understand it. It's not like... Friends is so good normally at turning really relatable situations into very funny scenes, you know? And this is just a thing that I've never even considered in my life before I'd watched this episode, that you would... pick up a phone and put it on your crotch. I don't get it.
If you haven't seen the episode recently, it's heavily implied by Rachel that Tag has an ongoing joke where he holds his phone to his crotch and has a conversation with his crotch somehow. I don't get what he is getting out of that.
Like, is it a thing he performs for, like, a whole group?
Is it like a
party trick?
Yes.
But if so, what is it, and who's enjoying that? Or is it a thing that it's like a thing for him and Rachel? Like, oh, it's a sexy thing. I'm going to pick up the phone and put it on my dong. I don't know. I don't understand what anyone's getting out of it at all. It's so bizarre. And then there's the scene where Rachel tries it and picks up the phone and puts it on her boobs. And it's like, what's happening?
If it would been mentioned one time as like this childish thing that Tag does, I get it. Fine, it's an example of him being childish. But then it keeps coming back like three or four times that thing is referenced to the point of which, as you say, Rachel tries it to see why he gets a kick out of it. And it's just, it's not funny enough to be in there multiple times.
I genuinely don't understand it. I mean, all that I would say is that when Rachel does it, at least there's like the visual of one end of the phone handle being over one boob and the other on the other, like her boobs are talking to each other on the phone. I don't get it, but at least that makes sense from a sort of logistics point of view. But what's Tag doing? Like, I don't know. Couldn't tell you. We could talk about this for hours, and all I'd have in conclusion was, I don't understand this at all.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, there isn't too much more to say about Rachel and Tag in this, is there?
Well, no, so the whole premise is... the weird thing is that they've come down from the roof to watch a movie, and then it's heavily implied that they're going to, you know, hit the hay and put their pyjamas on and poke it out the fly. What happens is just a passing comment from Rachel... why she'd suddenly think of this, I'm not sure, but she says, did you send those contracts out? And based on our previous sort of timeline thing, it must be midnight, 1 a.m, 2 a.m, who knows what time it is now. And Tag says, no, you didn't give me any contracts. And very quickly, they decide that the best course of action here is to go to the office immediately and sort of prove who's right and wrong, even though all they needed to do was really, they could just go and have sex now, then have a bit of a sleep, and then go to the office and you'll find out who is right and wrong in the morning. Why does that need resolving now?
Yes, there's not really much that they can do once they find these papers, is there? Like, it's not like they can then post them anyway.
No, right, exactly. So yeah, it's a bit of a strange one, but they do go down to the office. Rachel very quickly realises that she hasn't actually given them to Tag, so she was in the wrong all the way. She then tries to trick him by sending him away, sneaks them in his bottom drawer. She goes to get coffee later. Turns out he's clocked her, got them out of his bottom drawer and put them back on her desk. And then she just basically ends the whole thing by diverting the attention away from the fact she was in the wrong by telling him she's horny.
And that's it.
She just goes, I'm so hard for you right now. And that's it. The end. It's really odd, isn't it? I do enjoy the sort of to-ing and fro-ing because it is a genuine bit of... we see her put the contracts in his drawer.
There's a nice moment when it transpires that Tag has sort of second-guessed her and put them back in Rachel's office.
Yeah, because we don't see that happen. She says, why don't you open that bottom drawer? And you do. Like, I definitely fell for it the first time I watched it and thought, oh, he's going to get rumbled here now, and then they're going to have a conversation about that, but they're not there. It turns out they're back on the desk. Although what I would say... you know, if I'm, maybe it's because Tag's just a bit young and he's not that bright, but he hasn't really hidden them very well, has he? Like, if he thinks that what's happened is that they're in the bottom drawer and they should be somewhere else in her office, then why has he just plonked them on the desk? Because that's not very subtle, is it?
Although that is where they were to start with, but he didn't know that.
Yes, but does he know that? He doesn't know that. That's what I mean.
God, this is getting... They don't know that he knows that.
They don't know the contracts were on the desk. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so that's it. So then, again, like the Phoebe one, it kind of ends slightly oddly. They don't have an argument or anything at all. Rachel's wrong, Tag was right, the end.
This episode feels quite, brief.
Well, this is part of the thing with there not only being four plot lines rather than three that there normally are, but also the whole first bit is them on the roof all together. So it's even a couple of minutes before they all split off into these four
ones.
You know what I mean? So you jump back between lots of these different scenes quite quickly. It's a nice idea, the whole thing. I like the way it's all been, like, beated out so... everybody stays up all night for different reasons and we watch that unravel. Some really nice lines. I do remember really enjoying Chandler's, oh, I can't believe it's 2 hours until I have to call in sick to work or whatever it is when he says at the end. You know, there's a couple of really nice lines like that. But you do, we are jumping between the four plots very rapidly, aren't we?
And that leaves us with Ross and Joey.
It does. Now, Ross and Joey has a fundamental... I'd say two fundamental flaws, actually, as a plot line.
Well, these days, this plot lasts 2 minutes, doesn't it? Because...
But I'd say not even these days. This is 2001. This isn't in 1943. They've got phones.
Yeah, so surely they just phone one of the others who opens the door and they go home.
Like, they phone Monica and Chandler, who are downstairs and have a house phone, famously. I think there was a cell phone in season two, definitely. So, like, for 5 years, they've had cell phones. It's plausible, maybe, that they've both left them at home, but it seems a bit odd because Ross doesn't even live in that building, you know? The Ross Joey one's got a lot of pros and cons.
There's a lot of fragile masculinity around.
Yeah, and a lot of, like, surface-level homophobia as well, isn't there?
Yes.
Like, the whole thing ends when Ross would basically rather fall to his death than have his face near Joey's penis.
Yes. Through fabric, yes.
Yes, through fabric. Also, I mean, we're jumping right to the end here, but when he does fall, still quite a long
yes,
way.
Yes, doesn't he fall a long way? I thought the same yeah. thing. His scream goes on a while. I think his... yeah. How many stories do you think his scream suggests that he's fallen?
Like 7 or 8,
yeah.
like a it lot, does, just, like high.
Yeah,
it goes on for about 2.5 seconds.
And yet when he gets to the bottom, all he says is, I think I twisted my ankle. Like, I think you've bloody smashed your spine to bits, mate, by the sound of your scream.
And the whole way they engineer this is that Joey's holding on to the thing and just dangling from this quite high height. And, like, A, that's some pretty impressive upper body strength just to be holding on for that long. And B, then when Ross gets on it, I'm not sure... Like, that is proper, like, Olympic-level strength, isn't it?
I thought this, but there is one point where Matt LeBlanc's forehead looks, like genuinely sweaty, like he's straining. So for a while at least, I think he has genuinely at least been holding himself up because you kind of see him swinging. But I think for a while, he must have been taking that weight as well.
It's my question is, what is... Joey gonna do once Ross drops?
Yes, he's got to,
because that's a real impressive Spider-Man move to pull himself right back up.
He's and either then got sort of... to drop as well or pull himself back up.
Yeah,
which pulling himself back up doesn't help, because where does he go once he's back up?
Well, this brings me to the second thing, and this is maybe something that our American listeners can help us with, but I fundamentally don't understand the structure of the fire escapes on the outside of these New York buildings. I don't understand what they are.
Why would a fire escape be useful if it then required you to drop several stories?
So they say it gets stuck and it doesn't go any further, but what's getting stuck? What is it? Is it like a manual lift, like a cherry picker? Like, what's getting stuck?
Well,
or is
there
a ladder?
Yeah, you see, there are ladders that, like, drop down, aren't there?
So that's the idea, is it, that the ladder drops down, but floor by floor, and you have to move the ladder each time?
Oh, it sounds like a ball ache.
It sounds confusing. I just don't understand where they're dropping from, and that's probably just ignorance on our part, isn't it? But we've seen previously, and in the future, people use that fire escape quite a lot. Like, Joey climbs up it for various points to get to Monica and Chandler's apartment, which is on the... I mean, it's not a tall building, is it, actually? Because they're on the top floor and their apartment 20. So there's definitely at least 4 to 6 apartments on each floor, aren't there? Because we see, like, the long corridors in different episodes. So it can't really be more than 3 or 4 stories high. Anyway, they get stuck, don't they, after Joey moves the pipe to lock them in. They try... Well, they strongly consider breaking into somebody's apartment.
Yes,
until there's a big dog there.
Quickly becomes a plausible option, doesn't it, for them to break into someone's home.
A, how are you breaking in without any sort of weapons? Have they still got the pipe, maybe? Are they going to smash that window? Doesn't seem like a too plausible. But yeah, so we get to this scene, don't we, where Joey's hanging down, Ross is shimmying down. There's a lot of definitely funny lines, but laced in, like you say, fragile masculinity and surface homophobia, where there's a lot of uncomfortableness, isn't there, around them being very close together.
How can you make that funny, them having to climb down each other without it becoming this fragile masculinity thing?
Well, you can't, can you? That's the, like, otherwise it's just someone shimmying down. Because they talk about it, don't they? Have that discussion about whether it's face-to-face or ass-to-face.
Butt-to-face.
Oh, butt-to-face. Is it butt-to-face? Yeah. And they decide that they don't want faces on butts.
They really are too quick to rule out butt-to-face.
Yeah, I'd say butt-to-face is fine, isn't it?
Would you rather be butt-to-face or crotch-to-face?
Well, I don't think in that scenario I'd care enough. There's not much of a difference considering everything is layered anyway. Nobody's saying, guys, if your crotch is near my face, that means you want to have sex with me. Like, it's not like there's an implication there that you've got some sort of deeply buried sexual desires with your friend. You're literally just shimmying down him to get there, aren't you? But yeah, so that's it. And then, yeah, but when Ross falls, that's how we end the episode, isn't it? And he falls a very long way and does his ankle in, and that's it.
Is that the very end of the episode?
Well, then there's the credits, and the post-credit roll is Monica and Chandler then joking a bit about how they're still awake. Monica's got to go to work cleaning, in 7 minutes. And there's a callback from earlier where she says, well, if you've got 7 minutes, you get the mop and I'll get the thing or whatever. And yes, they're going to clean for 7 minutes rather than have sex. Classic Monica.
I mean, it says quite a lot about that ending, but I literally watched that just before we started recording and I couldn't remember it.
Yes. No, it's just a little addition at the end. But yeah, there you go. That's the one where they're up all night. D-O-N and also E. Done.
Yeah, I've exhausted my notes, Dave.
I did enjoy it, though. It is a fun episode. It is a nice little fun episode. Thanks, Annie, for suggesting it. If you'd like to suggest an episode for us to talk about on the podcast in the future, you can get in touch by one of our many social media brands. at FriendsWF on Twitter, at FWFpod on Instagram, or Facebook.com/FriendsPod. Drop us a little message. Send us a voice note if you can. And it will work very much like this episode has worked. And if you haven't joined us for our weekly Friends quiz, it'd be really nice to see you there, wouldn't it? It's become such a nice little community, hasn't it, of people on that quiz. I really, really enjoy it. Lots of people in the comments calling other people scruds.
Yes.
Or implying that either Pete or I are too drunk. Or there's a number of like running jokes now that I've...
It hasn't been implied that I've been drunk for a while. That's not happened for a few weeks.
Is that because you've been curbing it since that first week where everyone was implying you were really pissed?
No, it's just because I'm drunk all the time now.
Lockdown equals drunk, and there's no real differentiation between the levels of drunk anymore.
Exactly.
Great news. Well, there you go. So see you Friday, maybe, if you want to come and do the quiz. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with a new episode.
That'll be exciting. Something to look forward to, isn't it, Dave?
Yes, please. All the best.
Bye.
Traffic jams, tailgating, pileups. Ugh, the joys of driving. How could it get worse? The federal government wants to have a say in what you drive. That's right. The Biden administration's EPA is pushing mandates that would ban 2 out of every 3 vehicles on the road today. Don't let Washington become your backseat driver. Protect the freedom of driving your way. Visit EnergyCitizens.org. Paid for by the American Petroleum Institute.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like wary of the police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.